It was one of the most stunning disasters of the last decade. The day after Christmas 2004, the Asian tsunami killed nearly a quarter of a million people. Most of them, more than 175,000, died in Indonesia's Aceh province. In the 2 years following that utter devastation, reporter Michael Sullivan spent time with several people tracking for Morning Edition their recovery from the disaster, and he returned again a few weeks ago.
"Did you feel the earthquake this morning?" my interpreter asked when we met. "No," I said. "I missed it." "It was about 4:30 this morning," Firda said.
"Every time there's an earthquake, I get scared. It's like trauma for me. So every earthquake happen again, even if it's not too hard, it still make me scared.
I'd either slept through it or don't remember waking. The smell of thousands of rotting corpses, that one I remember. Firda and I had come to Pukambada looking for familiar faces, to a place I described 9 years ago as chewed up, spit out, gone.
For about a half a mile in either direction, there are only concrete foundations where houses once stood, and bits and pieces of people's lives, violently torn from them last Sunday morning. A red child's bike, a toy truck, school books. Survivors poke through the wreckage, kerchiefs over their faces to ward off the stench.
Sami Rudin and his wife Rouhani were among the first I met back then. The family stayed at her mother's house, farther inland, until their house could be rebuilt with help from a German NGO. It took almost 2 years, but when they finally moved in, they were happy. "Our old house was a little bigger, but this one is stronger," Sami Rudin said, "and the walls are much thicker than the old house." In 2006, Sami Rudin's trucking business was doing well, too. Everybody was busy back then. There was lots of work rebuilding. Fast forward 7 years. The NGOs involved in the recovery effort are long gone, and so is Sami Rudin's trucking business. It dried up when the foreign aid workers left, and then Sami Rudin got sick. "Stomach problems and hypertension," his wife Rouhani says, "that often leave her husband unable to sit up at night on his own. The family now ekes out a living running a small grocery on the main highway. They sleep, two adults, three children, in a room above the store. Then each morning she comes back here to her rebuilt home to cook and wash and clean, and it's exhausting." "Yes," she says, "I'm tired all the time. But I can't cook at the shop because the water there is dirty, so I have to come here to make meals and get the kids ready for school. I'd rather be living here," she says, "but I have to take care of my husband, and he has to stay at the shop at night so people don't break in." I ask Rouhani why their oldest boy, Yusran, now 18, can't stay at the shop so the rest of the family can be together here and make things easier for her. She doesn't answer. The boy does. He says he doesn't want to.
"I am not hubby."
And suddenly it's clear. The sweet 10-year-old boy, I remember, is now an 18-year-old unhelpful bully. Rouhani is embarrassed, and I'm embarrassed for her. Not what I was hoping for. So I go looking for another family I'd known then, hoping for a different outcome. And I get one, at the home of 40-year-old Mursaline, who lives just a few hundred yards and a whole world away. There's a big yard, lots of trees, a hen house, even a slide for the kids. Tucked into the lot on the right is the small shack Mursaline built just after the tsunami, and the simple but strong two-bedroom house an American NGO built for him 2 years later. He's even added two more bedrooms to accommodate his new and expanding family. Mursaline lost his first wife and son during the tsunami. Now he's remarried with three new children, and life, he says, is good. "After the tsunami," he says, "it took a while to feel normal. It was hard to get up in the morning, and I didn't want to do anything," he says. "Now," he says, "I know I have to earn to take care of my family." And so he does. He's been working as a subcontractor for a local construction company, he says. And while we talk, I'm struck by how often he smiles, all the while his arm draped around his oldest. Mursaline almost never smiled when I first met him. We laugh when I remind him of his dark humor after the tsunami. Back then he told me, "Yes, the tsunami took everything. But now at least I've got a great view of the mountains." Not anymore. His neighbors who survived have almost all come back and rebuilt. And they've planted new trees, too. And Mursaline's view of the mountains has been spoiled. And that's a good thing, he says. I'm happy about that. And I'm happy for him. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan.